is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Isn't it basically time to say enough? Enough of the Republican Party? I mean, this is a party that was started back in 1856 in Jackson, Michigan. Yeah, there's a couple of other stories of where it started, but, you know, that's one of the more commonly accepted ones. And it was started as a progressive, liberal, almost revolutionary party in the wake of the collapse of the Whigs. The Republican Party was started as the party that was going to push back against the Democratic Party's support of slavery, because the Democratic Party back in 1860 controlled the South. And the Republican Party came to basically be the party of the North. But in, you know, a decade after Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, terrible things happened to the Republican Party. They got basically co-opted by the robber barons as we went into the Gilded Age. And more and more and more Republicans were basically shills for the very, very rich. And, you know, Congress, the United States Senate, these seats were literally purchased by rich people. It's one of the reasons why Americans rose up in the early 19-teens and said enough already and passed a constitutional amendment to have direct election of the United States Senate. No more of this political appointment. But has the Republican Party gone so far that we should simply declare it a criminal organization? This is a racket. They should be prosecuted under the racketeering influence and corrupt organization laws, the RICO laws, or something similar. Keep in mind, in the Republican Party, there are basically two groups of people. Two groups of people. The rich and the suckers. And the rich know that they're running a scam. I mean, they know it. And I think it's time for us to say, you know, enough already. Right? We have had enough. This is, for example, just, you know, some of the feedback from this letter. By the way, Tom Cotton, this is pretty amazing. Tom Cotton, the guy who, you know, has been in the United States Senate for 60-some-odd days and says, you know, hey, let's blow up the President of the United States. Only a U.S. Senator can do it, right? Only 47 of them. bluntandcranky.wordpress.com, the blog, which is quoted over at Democratic Underground now by Rickster. The headline, Tehran Tom Cotton was bribed almost $1 million to send the Iran letter. Yep, Tehran Tom got a ton of contributions, in quotes, from agents of a foreign power to betray his country. The Emergency Committee for Israel gave Tom Cotton nearly $1 million in his race for a Senate seat 5 months ago, Eli Clifton reported. Cotton received $960,250 in support of campaign advertising in the last month of the election campaign. Cotton also got $165,000 from Elliott manager Paul Singer's hedge fund, although I think Paul Singer's an American. But anyhow, the blog, he says, notice the pattern, gentle reader. Money comes in and a letter goes out. It's bribery, plain and simple. Meanwhile, Trey Gowdy, the guy who's in charge of the Benghazi committee, which recently discovered that Hillary Clinton is, oh my God, used private email while she was Secretary of State. Trey Gowdy apparently is using private email and is refusing to discuss it. So if you happen to call 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121, the main switchboard number for Congress, and ask for Congressman Trey Gowdy's office and just ask, does he use private email? And if so, what are the circumstances? Inquiring minds want to know. Jason Chaffetz certainly was. He's got a Gmail address on his business card. David Brock sent an email or an open letter to Chairman Gowdy. I noted with interest your public demand that Secretary Clinton turn over her personal email server, blah, blah. This Orwellian demand has no basis in law or precedent, blah, blah. But since you insist that Clinton's private email be accessed, I'm writing today to ask you and your staff to abide by the same standard you seek to hold the secretary to by releasing your own work-related and private email and that of your staff to the public. Right. Meanwhile, some of the feedback to Tom Cotton's letter to the Iranians. These are newspaper editorials. You know, we started on Tuesday with the New York Daily News with this giant, you know, traitors headline. In New Hampshire, the Concord Monitor. Now, I used to live in New Hampshire. It's a very conservative state. It's a very Republican state. They pride themselves on the fact that all the hippies and liberals are over in Vermont. Right? Concord Monitor. Talking about Senator Kelly Ayotte, the Republican senator from New Hampshire, who signed this letter. Ayotte and the rest of the gang of 47 would like nothing more than for the American people to view the letter as a necessary defense against misguided negotiations and flawed policies, a comeuppance for an arrogant commander-in-chief who flaunts his contempt for the Constitution. They want you to know, America, that they wrote the letter for you because Obama must be stopped. In reality, they are playing a political game dangerously out of bounds. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette wrote, America's partners in the talks are among the world's most important nations, China, France, Germany, Russia, and the United Kingdom. They can only be appalled at seeing Secretary of State John Kerry and the president, who are charged with making the nation's foreign policy, hit from behind by one house of the federal legislature. The senators who signed this letter should be ashamed. By the way, has anybody called Tom Cotton's office to confirm that he received almost $1 million? Almost $1 million in supportive advertising in the last month of the campaign from the Emergency Committee for Israel? Sacramento Bee wrote, it's the Republican senators who signed the letters who could use a remedial civics class. The Constitution gives the president broad authority to conduct foreign policy. The Senate's advise and consent role only covers formal treaties. This potential deal on Iran's nuclear weapons program is not a treaty. It is a multinational agreement that involves Britain, China, France, Germany, and Russia, as well as the United States and Iran. Baltimore Sun. The poison pen note was a shocking example of just how far President Barack Obama's GOP critics in Congress are willing to go in an effort to undercut his foreign policy goals. The GOP senators might just as well have put a big sign over their chamber warning the mullahs in Tehran to prepare for war, because that's the practical import of rejecting any possibility of a negotiated resolution of the two countries' differences. The Boston Globe. Winning sympathy for the renegade Islamic Republic of Iran is no easy trick, but Republicans in the U.S. Senate seem to be accomplishing it with their breathtakingly reckless intrusion into international diplomacy. Traitors. The Iranians, by the way, have responded. The Iran supreme leader said that this letter is a demonstration of disintegration in the American political process. Is it time to declare the Republican Party over?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Is it possible that another party might rise and replace the Republican Party? Because this Republican Party is clearly, basically, a RICO Act violation. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, there we go. Charles in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Charles, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on your Roku box. What's up?
Yeah. You can hear me, Tom?
Yep, just fine.
Okay. One or two points out. I don't know if you've seen yet, but the latest Gallup poll indicates that congressional approval rate is down to 5%.
Wow. No, I hadn't seen that, but I still believe you.
I hear you've been hitting on the WhiteHouse.gov petition that's getting close to a quarter of a million.
I
over 223,000 folks.
I signed that petition about a half hour ago. Yep.
Well done, Tom. Spread the word every day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charles. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Ed in Des Moines, Iowa, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. Just a quick statement for you. You know how a lot of Republicans, they say, well, I'm a Republican because my dad's a Republican. And
right.
You've been going on and on about, Democrats used to be not progressive, and the Republicans used to be the progressive party. So I'm just calling, saying, you know, call a spade or a rose is a rose is a rose is a rose, and just rename the party so people know what they're actually voting for. My suggestion is you stay to the two-party system. One would be the Inequality Party, and I think we know who we're talking about there, and the other one would be the Fairness Party. That we let the people that are in office finish out their current term, and then when they come up for re-election, they have to run under one of those two banners. But in order to run under the fairness banner, they would have to have a, if they are already in office, they would have to have a track record supporting the fact that they are eligible for that party.
Right.
And I know at first the rules would be swelled on the Inequality Party, but I think over just a short period of time, you would see that party fade into non-existence.
Yeah. Well, what you're describing, Ed, is essentially imposing a requirement by virtue of the name that news agencies describe the political parties as they are rather than as they try to present themselves.
Correct.
That's something that I'm guessing at least the Republican Party would very much not like to do.
Oh, I understand it will never happen. But if we want to have any real change in this country and not just totally dismantle the system that we have,
Right. Then
we need to start calling things the way they are.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, to a certain extent, and I don't disagree with you that it would be fascinating to come up with, in fact, I can kick that out as a suggestion for people to call in with other suggested names, to rename at least the Republican Party and maybe the Democratic Party as well. But
Fairness Party sounds simplistic on first blush.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, if you look up the definition, which you really don't need to,
right,
it's self-evident, and it would be the perfect name.
Yeah, yeah, the Fairness. Well, and you know, in the early days, I mean, when Jefferson named the Anti-Federalist Party, which, you know, he didn't want the party to be defined by what it's against. So he named it the Democratic Republican Party. And then, you know, 30 years later, they dropped the word Republican from their name. But those two words, Democratic and Republican, were positive words at the time. So it was an attempt to do some positive branding. Ed, thanks for the call. Interesting concept. Let me kick it around here. We'll be right back. So some of the pictures that are floating around Facebook, here's a picture of John Boehner. It says traitor across the top of his forehead. And then below that, this is from Occupy Democrats. It says, because an unprecedented secret invite to a foreign leader just to try to bully our president is an act of treason. There's another one. It's got a picture of Benedict Arnold, you know, as if on a stamp, you know, with his general regalia. It says, I think it's time for the GOP to change their logo to something that better represents them. Yeah. The United States was founded on a Declaration of Independence from a foreign leader meddling in our affairs. We have statues and monuments of presidents and generals who have defeated foreign leaders meddling in our affairs. So John Boehner and Republicans secretly invite a foreign leader to meddle in our affairs? That's treason. These are just some of the graphics that are floating around on mostly on Facebook. Here's Tom Cotton writing his letter, and it's written in like child writing. You know, dear Iran, we want you to forget Obama and remember who the real brains of the government granted by our Constitution, your enemy, Republicans. Here's another one. Dear Iran, I'm writing to tell you that Obama is not the boss of us. We don't like you or him. If you guys make peace, we are going to be mad. Never your friend, the Republican state of the United, Senate of the United States. Number four, you know, the 47 traitors, by the way, is still trending on Twitter as a. And what's astonishing to me, nobody's called in to say if they learned from Senator Cotton's office how much money he got the day after that letter was sent. That letter was sent out on Monday. On Tuesday, he spoke to a group of defense industry lobbyists. Now, he got the almost $1 million in free advertising, apparently, from the Committee for Israel, the Emergency Committee for Israel, assuming that this blog, Blunt and Cranky, is correct. How much money did he get from the defense contractors? Arrest Tom Cotton for sedition. Here's one from Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor. He said, for the first time in American diplomatic history, one political party is devising its own foreign policy with its own entreaties to foreign governments. In my 45 years of political involvement, I don't remember any act by a major party that comes as close to the Republicans' recent actions to what might be called treason. This is a former cabinet member. Hey, Iran, this is Senator Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, and we are the fascist Republican Party, and we really want to have a little war with you, so please ignore President Obama, because we're in the middle of taking over the country, and he is no longer in control. The Koch brothers are the true owners of America, and they call all the shots, so expect a fun war with us. Sincerely, Tom Cotton. Right. So the Iranian response... Ayatollah Ali Khamenei called the letter a sign of the collapse of political ethics and a collapse of the United States system's internal and a sign of the U.S. system's internal disintegration. This according to the official Iranian news agency. They are looking at us and going, you guys are nuts. You guys are just totally flaming nuts. And then on top of this, it turns out that at least according to K-Pete over at the Democratic Underground, Lieutenant Colonel Joni Ernst broke the law by signing the seditious letter. Now, this is a link to a blog post over at the Daily Kos, and I should have clicked on it so I could tell you who the blogger was. I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me, but whoever this blogger is at Daily Kos is points out Lieutenant Colonel Joni Ernst is an active duty lieutenant colonel in the Iowa National Guard. So what does the Iowa state law regarding their National Guard say about an active duty member of the National Guard trashing the president? Quote, any person subject to this code who uses contemptuous words against the president shall be punished as a court-martial may direct. This is a serious, very serious infraction. Then they go on to note, whoever wrote this piece, the contempt toward officials is such a serious matter. Lincoln enforced that discipline during the Civil War. Truman enforced the same discipline after World War II when he relieved General MacArthur of his command. Obama did the same thing when he fired General McChrystal. In both cases, MacArthur and McChrystal both spoke out against the president. And in both cases, the president said, okay, buddy, you're out of here. This is Article 88 of the Federal Uniform Code of Military Justice. Any commissioned officer, now that would be Joni Ernst, whose family got almost $500,000 in welfare payments for being Iowa farmers, any commissioned officer who uses contemptuous words against the president, the vice president, Congress, the secretary of defense, the secretary of a military department, the secretary of transportation, or the governor or legislature of any state, territory, commonwealth, or possession, in which he is on duty or present, shall be punished as a court-martial may direct. Contemptuous words. Now, for those of us not in the military, you know, to be you know, facing possible jail term for using contemptuous language to describe the President of the United States sounds like a violation of our First Amendment rights. But the reality is that when you join the military, you quite literally, you sign a contract with the United States government and the U.S. Department of Defense, though whichever branch you're joining. And you literally in that contract sign away your constitutional rights and submit to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So has Joni Ernst violated Article 88 of the UCMJ? Has she? I don't know, but it seems entirely possible. Now, on the right, you've got something very interesting here. Stuart Webb. This posted by Stuart Webb. The article's by Laura Stevens over at weaponizednews.com. How the Republican Party is engaging in racketeering, fraud, and other crimes. Now, their complaint is that the Republican Party isn't fighting the Democrats hard enough.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Which means either they're the millionaires, which is unlikely, or they're the suckers, because those are the only two kinds of people that make up the Republican Party. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past here. The bad and the very, very gentacularly ugly. The good. Allagash Brewing Company. The brewery was one of 24 different American breweries, which on Tuesday signed the so-called Brewery Climate Declaration. Under the terms of the declaration, Allagash and its fellow breweries promised to align their business practices with a push for a more sustainable economy. They will do so, among other things, by using more renewable energy, reducing carbon emissions, and capturing their own methane emissions. Despite what you might hear on Fox so-called news, a green economy is possible. Good on Allagash for helping show the way. The bad. Bill Kristol. Most people know that the Oklahoma frat boys caught on camera chanting the N-word over and over again are to blame for their own ugly racism, and that their fraternity is the only one that was born in the South during slavery and has repeatedly been involved in racially charged incidents. But not Bill Kristol. He thinks these racist white boys singing a racist song is popular culture's fault. And by popular culture, he means rap music performed by black people. Check it out.
Popular culture becomes a cesspool. A lot of corporations profit over it, off it. And then people are surprised that some drunk 19-year-old kids repeat what they've been hearing.
Exactly.
Yes, the old it's rap's fault argument. Because why blame white people for white people's mistakes when you can blame black people for white people's mistakes? So much for personal responsibility, I guess. And the very, very ugly Rick Wilds. During a recent episode of his radio program, the far-right talk show host accused President Obama of being the reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. Seriously, take a listen.
I've told the truth about Barack Obama. I'm out of names to call him. I don't know what else to call him. He's wicked. He's evil. He's diabolical. He's full of the devil. He's demon-possessed. He's Adolf Hitler reincarnated. He's inspired ISIS. He's dreaming of leading a caliphate.
Right. Rick, check a psychology textbook for the word projection. I think you'll find it very interesting. And in the meantime, all that name calling is very, very ugly. Lindsey Graham. You know, again, this is like Republican cluelessness on parade. He says, this is BenSwan.com got this audio. Remarks that he made in, Lindsey Graham made in New Hampshire, Concord City Republican Committee last week. He says, and here's the first thing I would do if I were president of the United States. I wouldn't let Congress leave town until we fix this. I would literally use the military to keep them if I had to. We're not leaving town until we restore these defense cuts. We're not leaving town until we restore the intel cuts. Right. Lindsey Graham wants to impose martial law on the U.S. Congress. And apparently he's not making this up. So what do we do? What do we do with these 47 traitors? What do we do with a political party that has done nothing for this country since the 1920s? It's since the 19-teens, really. I mean, the Republican Party, the Progressive Republican Party, as led by William Howard Taft and Teddy Roosevelt, and Taft was sort of in between, but still, that Republican Party actually got some good stuff passed, like women's suffrage and the independent vote for senator. I mean, these are constitutional amendments, big deals. The estate tax, the national park system, these were all from progressive Republicans in the 19-aughts, 19-teens. But since then, the party has purged itself of progressives, and the Republican Party has done nothing for the American people other than obstruct everything. Dan in Chicago. Danielle says you've got a really cool song to share with us.
Well, you know, my singing voice is a little bit shot at, you know, not as good as it usually is in prime time, you know, which is usually later in the afternoon, but I'll try. This probably belongs better on Stephanie Miller because we're all venting, Tom. We liberals are just venting like crazy, and I guess that's how your show began. And I thought I'd dedicate this little song ditty to the hopelessly hopeful resuscitation of the Logan Act.
Okay.
It goes like this. Logan, 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 get them lawsuits rolling, send the 47 to jail. It truly is the season to punish acts of treason and get those sick Republicans to wail. Logan, 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 get them lawsuits rolling, get the noose and hang them real high.
Wow.
It truly is the season for justice with good reason. Their heinous acts are senseless to deny.
Yeah, I like all of it except for the lynching part. I would not advocate acts of violence against anybody, frankly,
venting,
even Republicans.
I'll tell you, it's just a venting. I don't advocate it either. It's just the way I feel.
I understand.
I mean, it's just the way it's just the behavior is disgraceful. And quite frankly, I don't know how people like President Obama don't verbally retaliate. At least even Harry Truman verbally retaliated against Republicans when they gave him grief. I just don't understand it.
Well, President Obama came out and he has spoken rather forcefully about this letter to Iran, saying that, you know, it was not good. It was harmful. John Kerry pushing back on it, too. I don't have their exact language right in front of me at the moment, but they both pushed back. But, you know, step by step, we'll see how this goes. But, Dan, thanks for sharing the song with us. And that was one of my favorite songs from my childhood, you know. Rowdy Yates, right? That was a good job. Thank you, Dan. Howard in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Howard, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Part of our problem as Democrats is that we're too nice. And that includes you, too. And I don't mean any disrespect when I say that. We are too ethical. We are too nice. We're playing a game in politics, and the idea is to win. And the Republicans are very good at playing the game. That's why they win.
You know, respectfully, Howard, I would argue that the game is not just to win. The game is also to be played. You know, the old cliche about life is a journey, not a destination. If in order to play in politics, I have to sacrifice my values, I would simply say no thank you. And I personally, this is very much like the conundrum that Native Americans faced when Europeans first came over here. If you fight them on their terms, you become them. If you run from them and hide, then, you know, you've got a serious problem. And if you hold to your values, then there's a chance, and it happened in pretty spectacularly, and I mean that in a negative sense. To most Native American tribes, there's a chance you'll get wiped out. And what I think the Democrats need to do is say, our values are the values on which this country was founded. Our values are at the core of every progressive change in the history of this country. And our values are pushing forward for more progressive change in this country. I mean, this goes back to this list I read to you yesterday where all of these things, you know, the majority of Americans are in favor of, allowing government to negotiate drug prices, low student loan rates, universal pre-K, fair trade, ending tax loopholes for corporations. I mean, the list has got 40 things on it. I won't go through, impose the whole thing on you. But I think that we can maintain our dignity and sanity and values and push back. I don't think you have to be, not Mr. Nice Guy in order to win.
Well, the idea is, in order for us to do any of these things, we have to win first. It doesn't mean that if you...
We got our guy in the White House, Howard.
Yeah, but we don't have control with the caucus room meeting.
No, I understand.
To Santa Claus theory, and yeah. Both of those you do very nicely, and I've passed them on to many people. But here's the other part of it. If the shoe was on the other foot, you better believe Darrell Issa would be holding hearings right now. And where are our hearings? Eric Holder can hold hearings, and we can make these people look like total idiots. And why aren't we doing it?
Well, I think I can't speak for the Democratic Party, and I haven't had this conversation with any Democrats or Democratic advisors, but my guess would be that tearing apart the country or going on a vendetta against these Republicans who wrote this letter is going to be more harmful than it would be of value. I think the president is taking the high road.
Nice. We're being nice guys again.
Right.
We need,
and that's why I'm saying let's prosecute the Republican Party for racketeering and organized crime violations. Let's put an end to this Republican Party, or at least ask them to majorly reinvent themselves. And I mean, they're taking hundreds of millions of dollars that are not disclosed. And in exchange for that, I mean, Tom Cotton taking almost $1 million from the emergency fund for Israel and then, you know, spitting out this letter. And then the day after the letter, he goes and he speaks to a group of defense lobbyists. I mean, that's who Tom Cotton is, really? I think as America figures this out, these guys are going to lose their base of support.
But why not use hearings as a basis for doing all of this?
Well, because we don't control the House or the Senate. And John Boehner and Mitch McConnell decide who has subpoena power in their respective bodies. So right now, Democrats don't have subpoena power.
How about Eric Holder? How about the Justice Department?
You would have to open a criminal investigation. And if you open a criminal investigation in the executive branch of members of Congress, you're going to have a terrible mess. I mean, you know, it's just not going to work. Howard, I totally understand your sentiment. And in some ways, I think what I'm calling for is more radical than what you are. I'm saying it's time to put this party out to pasture. Let's bring the Whigs back. And Howard, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is from Lauren Stevens. The Republican Party and its affiliates, party nominees, and taxpayer-paid representatives are engaging in an ongoing pattern of fraud and deceit. Welcome back. Dave in Amesbury, Massachusetts. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Listen, as much as I'd like to comment on the 47, you got to see what's going on in the Senate. A human trafficking bill, no-brainer, right? Everybody
right.
and his brother wants to get in on this one.
Right.
At the last minute, Republicans introduced abortion legislation into it.
Right.
Did you hear that?
Oh, I did, yeah. They want to extend the Hyde Amendment or expand it, right.
And the Democrats just go nuts. Boxer from California is up there saying that Republican staffers are lying to Democratic staffers. And
it's true.
It's a real show. It's unbelievable.
It's true. And I think that the Democrats are so horrified by this because what happened was the Republicans put this thing in, this abortion rider in, while the bill was still in committee. And they didn't tell the Democrats what they had done. The Democratic staffers and thus the Democratic members of Congress, I mean, nobody ever reads a piece of legislation. They have their staff read the piece of legislation, and they have consultants read it, and they have lobbyists. God only knows, you know, in fact, with the Republicans, they have lobbyists write it. And so the Democrats voted this out of committee, not knowing that this was in here. And now that it's on the floor of the Senate, everybody's reading the bill, and the Democrats are going, holy cow, we got snookered here.
Yeah, and, really. And they're having a hissy fit. And
legitimately.
It could be a showstopper for this bill.
Yeah, it could be. And, it's arguably you could say, well, OK, at least it's, it's a human trafficking bill and not a, you know, fund the entire government bill. And it's a relatively smaller important thing rather than a bigger important thing. But human trafficking is pretty serious, too. More importantly, what this behavior demonstrates is that the only way Republicans can get anything passed that fulfills their agenda because their agenda is all about either millionaires or suckers, and the abortion bill fits into the, you know, let's pander to the suckers category. The only way that they can get anything passed is by subterfuge. They can't do it by being honest about what they're doing. They can't do it by being upfront about what they're doing. They have to do it sneaky.
Well, I'm glad to know that you know all about it, because it just shocked me when I saw it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Dave, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Rebecca, watching Free Speech TV in Everett, Washington. Hey, Rebecca, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I'm calling about what the first caller had called in about changing the names.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Democratic Party should be called the People's Party. And the Republicans should be called the Business Party. Just call it what it is.
Yeah.
And then let the voters decide who they're going to vote for.
Yeah, the People's Party and the Business Party. He was suggesting, you know, the Fairness Party and the Inequality Party.
I know, but who's gonna claim the unfairness?
Right.
I mean,
right, or inequality.
If you call it the Business Party, that's who they represent, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And we represent people.
Yeah, or the Fat Cat Party, but that's kind of a pejorative.
But if you say social anything, then that's going to turn conservatives off.
Right.
So, you know, it's just crazy that all the games that does go on.
Mm-hmm.
And these 47, we cannot forget about that. And I agree with you. We need to keep our diplomacy, but we cannot let this go.
Yeah, I agree. Rebecca, thank you for the call. And that's why I'm still talking about it today. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before you. It's your mini support group for We the People, the Tom Harbin program. So a couple people have suggested things like, let's just change the name of the parties. We'll call the Democratic Party the Fairness Party, and we'll call the Republican Party the Inequality Party. Or somebody just suggested we call the Democratic Party the People's Party, and we call the Republican Party the Business Party, because at least that doesn't quite sound as pejorative as the Inequality Party. Possible. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, you wanted to weigh in on the Republican Party?
Well, yes. Basically, I think we should draw the line in the sand over this issue, and we should not let it go. We should just keep hammering them. Yep. This is an opportunity for change.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know what, Tom? You know, on TV, there's a lot about Hillary's emails, but we need to keep this going and really override that discussion and really put an end to this Republican Party. They are a threat to our national security and the in our liberty and our democracy.
At least the way they're currently behaving.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you always educate me on the past, on how they were as a party, and if they could go back to some of those roots, it'd be a lot better for this country. It sure would.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, in fact, one of the things that I had here, what do I do? Yeah, this is once again, I end up with too much paper. The Republican Party platform of 1956, this is Dwight Eisenhower's party. The platform says, and I quote, "Our great president Dwight Eisenhower has counseled us in all those things," this is a quote from Eisenhower, "in all those things which deal with people, be liberal, be human." Then they go on to say, "The record of performance of the Republican administration on behalf of our working men and women goes still further. The federal minimum wage has been raised for more than 2 million workers. Social Security has been extended to an additional 10 million workers and benefits raised for 6.5 million. The protection of unemployment insurance has been brought to 4 million additional workers. There have been increased workers' compensation benefits for longshoremen and harbor workers, increased retirement benefits for railroad employees, and wage increases and improved welfare and pension plans for federal employees. In addition, the Eisenhower administration has enforced more vigorously and effectively than any before the laws which protect the working standards of our people. They've improved job safety for our workers through assistance with the states. They further the protection, its programs of assistance to the millions of workers with special employment problems like older and handicapped workers. Strengthen and improve federal state employment service. Protect by law the assets of employee welfare and benefit programs. Assure equal pay for equal work regardless of sex." I mean, this is the Republican Party platform of 1956. This is what Dwight Eisenhower ran on. Republican action created the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare as the first new federal department in 40 years to raise the continuing consideration of these problems for the first time to the highest council of government, the president's cabinet. We recommend to Congress the submission of a constitutional amendment providing equal rights for men and women. The Republican Party points to an impressive record of accomplishment in the field of civil rights and commits itself anew to advancing the rights of all our people, regardless of race, creed, color, or national origin. Immigration. The Republican Party supports an immigration policy which is in keeping with the traditions of America and providing a haven for oppressed people and is based on equality of treatment, freedom from implications of discrimination between racial, national, and religious groups, and flexible enough to conform to changing needs and conditions. All of that in the toilet. The Republican Party no longer is the Republican Party. The Republican Party is now the Tea Party Party. It is now the Koch Party. It is now, you know, this is Kokistan, and this is the direction that they're pushing us. So,
you know, Tom, this is an opportunity to make change, to go back in a direction that more or less would have the values of this country and a progressive movement. And I think now is the time when we just keep pushing this issue. Yeah. We need to change this party because it's a threat to us. It really is in its current state.
Well, but, yeah, I think it's a threat to the United States of America. And good Republicans, you know, my dad's generation of Republicans or my dad's type of Republican, you know, Eisenhower Republicans need to step forward and take back their party, and do so before somebody successfully prosecutes them for high crimes and misdemeanors. Mark, thank you for the call. Larry in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Good afternoon, sir. The reason I was calling was about the 47, of course. And I heard a term this morning, pro-rapture caucus. Kind of a little bit of a conspiracy here. There are individuals in this world, like Pastor John Hagee, who has had the ear of George W. Bush. And he believes that by backing Israel in a fight against Iran, he can bring about the end of the world and have the rapture occur.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, when you talk about, you've mentioned that this Tom Cotton took $960,000 from the Emergency Committee for Israel, and the next day I can't hear you.
Yeah, no, I'm here. It wasn't the next day. Okay. I mean, that was in November before his election, and then.
Right. And yesterday we spoke about him meeting with some military industrial people.
Oh, right, yeah. And, the day after he submitted the letter, he spoke to a private meeting of defense contractors.
I would be curious to know if any of his contributions before he was elected came from individuals like Pastor Hagee, who are so eager to bring about the end of the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, in my book, Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, I quote Ronald Reagan. He actually was at a state dinner, was sitting next to the prime minister of Israel, and I'm forgetting which prime minister it was at that point in time. And in addition to telling him the story about how Reagan was there to liberate, I think it was Buchenwald, maybe whatever, wherever it was, and Reagan wasn't there. He had just seen the movie. He apparently did a Bill O'Reilly. He also went on to say that he was of the opinion that in his lifetime, we would see the rapture. Basically, you know, this is the time that it's all going to happen, and that's pretty scary stuff. You know, when senior officials are, yeah. And in fact, that's the scary thing about some of the guys in the Iranian government, is that they may be rapturists as well. They just have their own, you know, their 13th Mufti or whatever it's called. And we've got, you know, the reincarnation of Jesus. And then, you know, you've got the Lubavitchers who are like, you know, oh, it's Mr. Schneerson, Rabbi Schneerson, as I recall. So it's like every group has their, you know, and the Dalai Lama, did you see this? The Dalai Lama, day before yesterday, said that he may not reincarnate. And the Chinese government came out and said, no, you have to reincarnate. We're in charge of whether you reincarnate or not. We get to decide, not you. And the Dalai Lama's like, really? Anyhow, Larry, thank you for the call. Religion contaminates everything. We will continue with this conversation and other news of the day in just a few minutes. Stick around. Here comes the news.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Well, the Republicans are now actually doing fundraising based on their traitorous letter. Seriously, I'm not making this up. They're actually sending out letters to their base. And I mean, they've actively right now, they have right-wing hate radio and Fox so-called news, you know, GOP TV, both working very aggressively to say that these Republicans didn't do anything wrong. They're the ones who had the courage to confront an out-of-control president. Right. Ed O'Keefe and Mike DeBonis report this over at the top of Daily Kos today. Marco Rubio was proud to be one of the first senators to sign the letter, said a message written by a Rubio advisor that included a link to a donation page. Lindsey Graham told supporters, "We cannot trust Iran for 1 minute when they claim they simply want a peaceful nuclear power program." He added to his potential financial donors, I hope you will stand with me today by making an immediate financial contribution. Do you get how craven this is? First, they violate the Logan Act and commit treason. They kick the President of the United States in the teeth. They tell our enemies, don't negotiate with us, don't trust this president. This would be like Tip O'Neill sending a letter to, and I mean, very much like Tip O'Neill, when Reagan was president, sending a letter to Gorbachev saying, don't negotiate with Ronald Reagan because anything he works out with you regarding the dissolution of the Soviet Union, regarding the strategic arms talks, regarding nuclear nonproliferation, anything he works out with you, we can blow up. We can screw it up for him. Can you imagine if the Democrats had sent a letter to Gorbachev saying that in 1986, 87, whatever year it was that Reagan started seriously having these meetings with Gorbachev? I mean, can you imagine? And then if those Democrats started doing fundraising letters to their base saying, hey, look at this, we sabotaged President Reagan's attempts to wind up the Soviet Union with President Gorbachev. Please send us money. The New York Daily News calls these 47 senators traitors. White House spokesman calls them reckless, irresponsible, and misguided. I mean, this is just genuinely astonishing. Truly astonishing. Pat Caddell, you know, name blast from the past. Unless you regularly watch Fox News, most people don't remember who Pat Caddell is. He was the Democratic pollster who basically helped run Jimmy Carter's 1976 successful bid to be president, to beat Gerry Ford. And Pat Caddell since then has become a Fox News contributor. He's a Democratic consultant. And he was on Fox News, and he said, I blame the donors for allowing themselves to be played by Marx. He says the Republicans are basically, I mean, he's basically saying what I've been saying. The Republican Party is made up of two kinds of people, rich people and suckers. He says, I blame the donors who allow themselves to be played for marks. I blame the people in the grassroots for allowing themselves to be played for suckers. It's time to stop being marks. It's time to stop being suckers. It's time for you people to get real. And then, you know, the article goes on. This is Pat Cadell, you know, unloading on this stuff. And he's speaking to a group of, this is at CPAC, right? He's speaking to a group of Republicans. He says, when you have the chief of staff of the Republican National Committee and the political director of the Romney campaign and their two companies get $150 million at the end of the campaign. Now, keep in mind, they ran a losing campaign. This is the chief of staff for the RNC and the political director for the Romney campaign. Their two companies got $150 million at the end of the campaign. Okay, he says, when you have the chief of staff of the Republican National Committee, the political director of the Romney campaign, and their two companies get $150 million at the end of the campaign for the fantastic Get Out the Vote program, some of this borders on RICO, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. Cadell said, it is all self-dealing going on. I think it works on the RICO thing. They're in the business of lining their pockets. The Republican Party, Pat Cadell said, to a group of Republicans, is in the grips of what I call the CLEC, the Consultant Lobbyist Establishment Complex, CLEC. He said, just follow the money. It's all there in the newspaper. There's money passing under the table on both parties. Don't kid yourself. If you can't see racketeering in front of you, God save you. How the Republican Party is engaging in racketeering, fraud, and other crimes. Laura Stevens from weaponizednews.com. I allege that the Republican Party, state, national, county, and other affiliated organizations is engaged in fraud, mail fraud, racket, immigration law violations, possible bribery, and other crimes as defined under federal racketeering law. 18 U.S. Code Chapter 96, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations. Enterprise includes any individual, partnership, corporation, association, political parties, or corporations, or other legal entity, or any union or group of individuals associated in fact, although not a legal entity. And pattern of racketeering activity requires at least two acts of racketeering activity, one of which occurred after the effective date of this chapter, the last of which occurred within 10 years, excluding any period of imprisonment after the commission of a prior act of racketeering activity. And Lauren writes, the Republican Party and its affiliates, party nominees, and taxpayer paid and partly funded representatives are engaging in an ongoing pattern of fraud and deceit against the American people. But then, you know, Lauren goes off and says, you know, their fraud is they're not going hard right enough. Oh, man. What do we do with this? What do we do with it? Dave in Palm Bay, Florida. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Listen, you know, I realize Eric Holder's on the way out and everything, you know, and he's got a huge case of senioritis, but I don't give him a pass to not prosecute this, the 47. You know, everybody who joins public office swears to uphold, protect, and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I don't know why they even mutter those words unless they're going to back it up with following the law. And the Logan Act is a law.
Right.
And I think Eric Holder has a duty to do it. He can't, you know, just do senior skip day and not, you know, do his responsibility. He doesn't have an option. It's like a cop watching a liquor store robbery. You know, he does not have the option not to pursue. And right. I don't give Eric Holder that option. He doesn't have a judgment call here. I mean, what do you think?
I think that probably, I think that this is enough of a gray area that legally bringing charges against these guys is going to be really difficult. I would love to see somebody do it who is extrajudicial, who is not part of the establishment, part of the political party. Somebody, you know, like with Citizens United, right? You had just some,
yeah.
These guys, you know, David Bossie, who runs Citizens United, he just brought this lawsuit forward and went for it. I would like to see a private group or a group of private individuals who will assert that they have been harmed by the Republicans' letter to Iran, the harm being that now their children face a greater threat of nuclear war in the future. And you know, and there's other harms that you can identify. Iran, I don't know if you've been watching the news recently, but the Iraqi army, along with, quote, Shiite militias, end quote, are starting to beat up ISIS pretty badly. Well, Shiite militias is code for the Iranian army, right? It's for Iranians. So Iran is actually fighting with us against ISIS, but nobody wants to say it out loud. So you could even argue that we're if the Republicans have their way, we would lose against ISIS. So I'd love to see somebody establish standing that way. Thank you, Dave.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll see where this goes. I mean, this is a fascinating time we live in. But rather than having the government prosecute them, I would like it to be you or me. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Dan, watching Free Speech TV in Marble, Colorado on DirecTV. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. One, I love your show, and I try to listen to it every morning while I work.
Thank you.
You know, you keep talking about the two classes of Republicans, or the two groups, the millionaires and the suckers.
Right.
There's another group, and it might be a subset of suckers, but it's the suck-ups, the people that lick the boots, hold the coattails, expecting to go along on the ride, although they don't realize they're just being taken along.
Right.
On a ride.
Yeah, in my world, those people are also the suckers. But I think you're right. It is a subset, and it's the subset that John Dean identified on this program last week when he was talking about the authoritarian mindset and how there's a small number of authoritarians who also have leadership skills, and they end up with an authoritarian leadership style, Mussolini, Hitler, that kind of thing. But there's a much larger group of authoritarians who actually are authoritarian followers. They're looking for a leader, and they want to follow somebody. And that's a large chunk of the suckers in the Republican base, in my opinion. But I think you nailed it, Dan. That's a good one. Thank you very much for the call. Lori in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Tom. I have a problem. I teach at the university, and we tried to talk about this 47 on Tuesday.
Right.
Most of the students didn't know anything about it, but I had three very aggressive students. But the one that disturbed me the most is a young man who's a veteran. He's an adult. And he said that Obama not only is an abuser of his authority, but he is pro-Hezbollah. At that point, I was speechless. I didn't
really
know what to say after that.
Really? What evidence did he present?
A student.
Did he present any evidence for this, or has he just been listening to Mark Levin?
I've been thinking of approaching him that way today. I have class today.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of asking him to do a short paper of research about what evidence he has and using some good academic journals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, if it's willful ignorance, good luck, you know.
Yes.
The old joke about when a man's paycheck depends on his not understanding facts, he's going to have a hard time understanding those facts. On the other hand, if it's not willful ignorance, if it's just, he's a victim of Fox so-called news and, Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal and Rupert Murdoch's television network and, Rupert Murdoch's movies and God only knows what all, then maybe you could be waking him up.
Yes, I'm going to try that. The other two, I think, are hopeless, but this particular one is a smart young man.
He
surprised me to hear something like that.
Yeah, all the more the tragedy, too, because the guys in the Republican Party, or the people in the Republican Party, who are aggressively building their sucker core, as it were, are just, they're pumping out stuff that is just so vile. Is so vile. Lori, thanks for the call. Call us back and let us know how it works out, okay? Lori? Lori's gone. If you're still listening, Lori, call us back and let us know how it works out with your student. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past. Betty is Sacramento, California, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Betty, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It's really nice to hear your voice. I really appreciate your words and your writing so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm the only one that remembers this, and I'm wondering if you remember it, too. I think it was the early 2000s that some, oh, my goodness, they're just so unintelligent, and that's just as polite as I can be about it. Some Republican was really happily proclaiming that, yes, we're going to have 100 years of Republican rule. And he was so thrilled with himself. He was just tickled like out of some pep rally. And at the time, I dismissed it because I thought, well, that can never happen. I mean, we have free elections here. Well, then 2010 came, and they started passing all the laws and the voter ID stuff and the gerrymandering, and I thought, oh, my God, they're really doing it.
Yeah.
And it's a perspective that I don't often hear anyway. I mean, this is a vast right-wing conspiracy, and there is thought. I mean, I have to admire their precision. They're the Borg, you know.
Yep.
So I just wondered if you had ever – did you remember that, and have you ever –
I remembered a number of people suggesting that right after George Bush was handed the presidency by the Supreme Court. There was a lot of you know, dancing on this, but you're right. I mean, not only Citizens United facilitated this in a big way, and the Supreme Court in striking down the Voting Rights Act, or you know, Section 4 and a good chunk of Section 5. Of the Voting Rights Act facilitated this. So I would say really this was the Supreme Court handing the governance of the United States over to the very wealthy class, basically. And I agree with you. And then they set about, you know, voter ID suppression laws, voter suppression laws. They've you know, which is rolling back, you know, going back to Jim Crow, and now it's James Crow Esquire, as Joe Madison likes to say. You've got that. And then all of this other stuff that's designed to just, you know, obscure what they're really up to. Yeah, I think that they and all the gerrymandering and all the efforts to take, you know, all these state houses in 2010, and the you know, the Tea Party efforts, outreach to get people to become in the Republican Party with the party chiefs, you know, the precinct committee persons, trying to get people to take these positions. So, yeah, I'm with you, Betty. I think it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
They've gone about it with a military kind of precision that, honestly, every time I watch them make another move, it's like watching a chess piece fall into place. And
yep.
I think they've really been planning this for a very, very long time.
Yeah,
and
since the 70s.
Rather successfully.
Yeah, they've
exactly.
been planning it for,
yeah,
since
Alex.
The 70s. There's about one-third of my book, The Crash of 2016, is about how they planned this thing and how they put it into place over the last 30 years and how it's going to inevitably destroy this country economically because, you know, they're vampires, you know. It's just they're drinking the blood of the country. Betty, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Excellent point. Dan in Shoreline, Washington. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Back at you.
Yeah, I discovered that we're the same age. We were both born in May. My twin brother and I were born on Mother's Day in May, so that was kind of special. But
that's great.
I tried to call Tom Cotton's office this morning to ask him about the almost $1 million from the emergency fund for Israel. And first of all, the number that's published when you search on him is wrong. And I had to get the correct number from the office that I got to. And then, of course, the mailbox is all full, so you can't leave any messages.
Right.
But I tried to go to his websites, and the official site, and it says this page can't be displayed. So either it's clogged up or he's turned it off or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me just look at this. It should be cotton.senate.gov. No, Cotton's a senator.
This one,
yeah,
is cotton.house.gov.
Yeah, that's his old. See, he used to be a member of the House of Representatives. He got elected to the Senate 2 months ago, 3 months ago, and so now he's a
Maybe
senator.
That's why the number's wrong here, too.
Right, yeah, you've got his old information. You need to go to cotton.senate.gov. I'm looking at it right now. It's right here. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So I went over to his web page or his Facebook page, And, of course, he's got a lot of stuff on there, I Stand With Israel and so on. So I commented on it. Of course, you stand with them. You got almost $1 million from them. It sounds like a bribe to me. So I think that's one way if people want to go over to make a comment on that, too. And then, to my horror, I discovered that my twin brother likes him. So I guess we're just opposite poles when it comes to the politics.
Families are wonderful.
Anyway.
Families are wonderful. It's remarkable. Yeah. Well, good luck on that. Now that you know, and probably a lot of people are confused about this because Tom Cotton was a member of the House of Representatives for a number of years, and at least a couple of terms from Arkansas, and then he ran for the Senate, and now he's their senator. So, anyhow, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, Dan, and keep up the great work. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Welcome back. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back. We'll be right back with your calls and my thoughts on the news of the day. And there's more news to come.
Look, up in the sky.
It's a bird.
No, it's a plane.
We are autonomous robotic organisms from the planet Xenu.
And now, a story about a bird.
And welcome back to our Pigeon Alert. Tom Harford here with you. Yes, they have come up with this is the official cover story. They got a picture of a pigeon with a little attachment on his back with little sticks that attach to his wings. And it says a technology that generates electricity from the beating wings of birds, bats, or even moths could produce enough power to run a device that collects data, such as location, migration, habits, physiological stats, by biologists. It uses vibration energy. It's a piezoelectric effect. There's certain crystals that if you move them, they generate electricity. And, in fact, this is the basis of some microphone technologies. It might even, actually, I think this is a dynamic microphone. This may well be also a piezoelectric, the way that you're listening to me now. But, you know, really, I think that this is just a way of acknowledging that these pigeons are just robots, right? They can supply enough power to. Okay. Two police officers were shot in Ferguson, Missouri last night. They were shot from apparently a sniper location some distance away from the protesters. So here's the question. I'm not going to assert this. I'm just going to put it on the table as a question. What do you think the odds are that we're going to find out, if we ever find out who the shooter is or shooters are, we're going to find out that they are provocateurs? More cops have been killed by the sovereign citizen movement in the United States than pretty much any other cause. It's one of the principal causes. These guys are one of the leading killers of police in the country. If you go back and read the history of Tim McVeigh, Tim McVeigh had read a book called The Turner Diaries. And The Turner Diaries totally radicalized Tim McVeigh. In fact, I'll tell you what, we've got a whole bunch of calls here I want to get to. At the top of the next hour, I'll tell you the story of The Turner Diaries and Tim McVeigh and how we ended up in the situation where somebody who is presumably rational, that would be myself, could even conceivably embrace as far out a conspiracy theory as that the shooters in Ferguson who tried to kill these two cops or who intentionally wounded these two cops were actually trying to start a race war in their mind, which is what the Turner Diaries is all about, that they're white people who are provocateurs. We'll see. I may well be wrong, but I would not be at all surprised if I'm right. Tim in Seaside, California. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Hey, you know, your pigeon alert was good timing because I thought of a pigeon song I'd also like to share with you.
Okay.
But for was a comment on the thought of the parties being named the People's Party and the Business Party.
Right.
I think there are a lot of people who vote Republican who are small business owners, and I think they conflate their position as being the same as wealthy corporate businesses. So I think they would tend to gravitate towards a business party.
Yeah, if they're making less than $100 million or less than $100,000 a year, they are suckers.
Yes.
Right. If they're making more than $100,000 a year, then the Republican Party might have something to offer them. At least more than $118,000, because at $118,000, if you make more than that, or is it $108,000? It's one or the other. If you make more than that, you no longer have to pay 6% of your income between you and your employer in Social Security tax, FICA tax, payroll tax. And so you suddenly are the beneficiary, once you make more than $118,000 a year, the beneficiary of the Republican policy of not having a flat tax for Social Security, just having a tax on working people. So, yeah, good point, Tim. Thanks a lot for the call. Good one. John in Gilbert, Arizona. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. Thank you for the education you give us 5 days a week.
Thank you.
Hey, Tom, here's my question. You know, when you you started your program perfect this morning, talking about it's time to get rid of the Republican Party. And here's my question, and just hand me out, and then I'd like to put your take on this. But, you know, it's time for this country to come clean that the Republican Party is a domestic terrorist group that is funded by the Koch brothers. And I just got done watching the Koch brothers exposed 2014, the documentary that was just out.
Right.
And I guess I've just really, really had it, and I mean, no disrespect to Bernie Sanders, but I get tired when people talk about, you know, our friends on the other side. Well, you know what? Anybody who doesn't want me to have health care is not my friend.
Right.
And then in terms of us as the citizens prosecuting these senators, is there any way that we could get Mike Capitonio involved and we could set up a website and we could all just go and donate and get this thing going on our own?
That's an interesting question. Usually Pap is with us on Thursdays. He's not today because he's in the middle of a court case. But next week I'll ask him that question. That's a good one. John, thank you for the call. Maine in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Maine, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Professor? I just wanted to say, you know, you were saying that the Attorney General couldn't file charges or they couldn't make them stick.
I think, you know, it's possible he could file charges. It's possible he could make them stick. What I was saying is that the political blowback, that would totally politicize everything, and including the president's office, which he has very wisely avoided doing. And that was my concern. Whereas if you brought the lawsuit or I brought the lawsuit or somebody independent of government brought the lawsuit, it would be viewed as less political, the way that the Citizens United group, you know, they were really trying to do a hit job on Hillary, but they framed what they were doing in a different way, and it was an outside group. It makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, don't we have on the Democratic side some, you know, a group that's, you know, that's bold enough or strong enough, you know, to file the charges anyway? I mean, just to expose them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people at work and stuff right now, they don't hear this.
Yeah.
And when they get off work, you know, they don't know that all this has gone down, or very few do.
Well, the problem, Maine, is that on the right, they've got all this money. So they can launch, I mean, as we speak, there are hundreds of lawsuits going on all across the United States, in states, counties, towns, to stop people from protesting fracking, to promote, you know, to prevent women from getting abortions, to, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right? To cut taxes for rich people, to bust unions. I mean, they have so much money for lawsuits. I don't know of any progressive groups that have a spare couple $100,000 that they could use to hire one of the big law firms here in D.C. that would be necessary to do one of these things.
Yeah, but don't we have billionaires on our side too?
Not so many, actually.
Oh man, I mean, who could?
You got a couple.
I mean, like, the Koch brothers. They said they rounded up $900 million. You might as well say they don't got $1 billion for this next election.
Right. There's nobody on the left who's doing anything close to that.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, this is we got to stop tiptoeing through the tulips. and get for real. I mean, they come through with a bulldozer like they bulldozing.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's one of the reasons I'm putting this topic up every day this week. We need to figure out what to do and get about it. Maine, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Thanks for listening to WCPT. Sammy in Alachua, am I saying that right, Florida, Sammy?
Yeah, Alachua.
Alachua.
Real
so,
good.
What's up?
Well, I just was going to address exactly what that guy said before that about lawsuits. Mm-hmm. That yesterday a gentleman brought up the idea of a pack of cards called for the 47 traders.
Mm-hmm.
And you could use the proceeds to pay for the lawsuit.
Ah.
You could call the group Taking Back America.
Right.
Or something.
Right.
But it's just an idea. And I would buy 50 of them.
Yeah.
To start it off.
So, yeah, this is the kind of thing to take to Adam Green at the Progressive Change Committee, you know, the PCCC. And, you know, or somebody like that. So, you know, one of those groups. Excellent suggestion, Sammy. Thank you very much for the call. Kim in Raymond, California. Hey, Kim, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Actually, I have a couple points. The first one is about the naming of the parties. And primarily when you have your, on the big picture, when you have your politics rumble,
mm-hmm.
and you always have a Republican refer to the Democrat Party. And I know it irritates you, or it seems to as much as
it does.
And I'd like at that point to suggest you might ask them how they come up with that name. And it seems to me there's really only two ways. First is they don't understand the various adjective form of various nouns, or two, Rush Limbaugh's their daddy.
Right.
Rush started that.
Yeah. Well, actually, it wasn't Rush who started it. It was Joe McCarthy. And
okay, well,
and Joe McCarthy famously said, it's Democrat Party, as in rat.
Okay, well, I heard Rush just a couple weeks ago take credit for it.
No, I'm sorry, Rush. Seriously? Rush took credit for renaming the Democratic Party? That was Joe McCarthy.
He said he did it because he wanted to irritate Democrats.
Yeah, all right.
And is this.
Rush is at the end of his career. He is desperately, you know,
oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I shouldn't pick on my colleagues.
Well, I live in the Central Valley, and he is actually, of all the radio shows, he's the most progressive voice.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's a real commentary on the state of the media landscape in the United States right now. Kim, thanks a lot for the call. That's fascinating, too, that Limbaugh is trying to claim, you know, he's trying to claim that he invented the Democrat Party.
Right.
Anyhow, Bob Ney, Congressman Bob Ney, will be with us in the Talk Radio News Service right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Bob Ney's book, by the way, is Sideswiped. And if you want to read The Real Crimes of John Boehner, it's right there. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, do you know if does Free Speech TV have any written agreements with the Roku folks about technical quality control?
I have no idea, but if you call their offices in Denver, they could tell you.
Okay, because I've been getting a lot of problems with this Roku coming, the signal stops, and this please wait loading comes up all the time lately with your program in Democracy Now! And even sometimes when I tune into Stephanie Miller. But it's really a problem right now.
You need to contact Free Speech TV. Their phone number is in the phone book in Denver. I don't have it in front of me, but it's not hard to find. In fact, it's probably on freespeech.org's website.
Okay, I'll try that. Listen, I kind of agree with Howard's sentiments earlier when he talked about how our side has a problem that we behave too ethically. I think liberals behave too ethically, but I think the Democrats, they play too nice. I mean, they're not too ethical because of the fact they vote too many times with Republicans. And along those lines, up the Rawhide song, I love all of it, including the hanging thing. Because if we don't express those sentiments openly to Republicans, it's like they say all the time, they don't respect people who don't want to physically stand up to them.
Yeah, I don't think, though, threatening people with death is a good idea.
In Nazi Germany, who were the first people that they abducted and killed? We're liberals.
Yeah.
And if you think that can't happen in this country, Tom, we got a problem.
I think it's unlikely it'll happen in this country. I'm not worried about, frankly, about a Germany scenario. I'm far more worried about a Mussolini scenario or a, what's his name, Yi, the guy who is the dictator for life of Singapore, you know, a Chinese scenario, where basically your government becomes slightly more repressive, slightly less responsive to the people. You know, and eventually massively more repressive and less responsive to the people, and basically entirely run by the rich and the powerful. And that's the direction we're moving, and that concerns me tremendously. I don't see it. You could argue that the Republican Party, the Nazi Party was a death cult. You could argue that there are some in the Republican Party who are members of a death cult. I would say there are some members of the Republican Party who are members of a Christian death cult. You know, they're hoping for the rapture and all this kind of stuff. And there are others who are part of a, you know, a misogynistic or racist cult, but nothing to compare with Germany.
Hey, Tom?
Yeah.
On a lighter note, when you mentioned in your Science and Green News about the zombies, you know, I don't watch that show, but I see the trailers for it all the time on TV.
Yeah.
And the first thing that comes to my mind is they all remind me of Republicans. And true to fact, we always talk about how they love to project onto other people thoughts
right.
in their own psyche. Well, I think we've already got them. They're called Republicans. If you go to Alaska or Idaho or wherever, you're going to run into them.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, there you go. And like zombies, they're just like they never go away. It's like, how do you get rid of these Republicans? Thanks a lot for the call. Time? 15 seconds. Okay, great. Not enough time to get another caller in here. The point that I want to make, and I think it's worth making over and over and over again, is that there are two kinds of people in the Republican Party. There are rich people, and there are suckers. Now, there's arguably a third variety, and that would be the people like Trey Gowdy and the people like Tom Cotton, who are not millionaires, although I don't know. They both might be very wealthy, but I don't think so. We're not rich, but who are the shills for the rich people. And they're not quite suckers. They just, you know, have given up all their humanity. We'll be back with Bob Ney, the Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Ten minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Bob Ney is on the line with us, the author of Sideswiped, and it's brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Ellen is in South Sudan right now, and free-don.org. And Congressman Ney, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am well. So has anybody introduced any kind of action against these 47 senators? Is anybody contemplating, you know, suing them, prosecuting them? Is there anything like this on the, you know, within government or from private groups?
Well, in the blogosphere, there's a lot of talk about the Logan Act because this is such a blatant violation. Now, nobody's really prosecuted under that older act. But if you read it and you look at what they did, it makes a lot of sense that somebody really could push this issue if they wanted. Now, they've responded, well, Nancy Pelosi met with President Assad. Well, Nancy Pelosi can meet with who she wants. Any member of Congress can go anywhere they want. They're not even, you know, restricted, for example, to go meet with Castro, which many have done. But there's a difference between meeting with someone and saying, by the way, Mr. President of Syria, I want you to do this against our president. That's not what she did.
Right.
After all, Bush administration met with Saddam Hussein. This is a different case. This is urging a formulation of a policy against America. Now, I will say in respect to the one caller talking about zombies, Tom, the only excuse I haven't heard of backtracking now on this letter is that a zombie wrote it for them.
And
you have John McCain. I love the McCain quote. I saw the letter. I saw it looked reasonable to me, and I signed it. That's all. I sign a lot of letters.
Right.
Now, Rand Paul, by the way, he's a compassionate conservative. He was just trying to help the president. He was trying to help President Obama. That's what he's saying now.
Really?
Now, yes, he actually said that. He signed that to help President Obama. So you've got some members backtracking because they know the response by the American public is, you've got to be kidding me.
Right.
I mean, after all, the Ayatollahs of the most conservative ilk in Iran who do not want any form of agreement, who want to do what they want to do, they applaud this letter.
Yeah.
And
no, it was basically our right wing talking to their right wing.
That's correct. So, you know, Secretary of State Kerry made his point before Senator Bob Corker's committee. Now, there's the telling point when this first came out. If you look down the list of the 47, they're calling it the Gang of 47. If you look down that list, the missing name, and I noticed this the first second I looked at it, was Senator Bob Corker. And why is that important? He is chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. You can bet your life they went to him and they wanted him to do the lead letter. He knew this was not appropriate to do, and he kept his name from it.
Right. And he has come out and said that, basically.
Oh, yes. He said this isn't the way to do it.
Right.
And that's what started the avalanche. Then they went to Profiles in Courage, John McCain, and he said, well, I sign things like this all the time.
Right.
This wasn't make this National Pineapple Day in America. This was asking a foreign leader to go against an American policy. In fact, they misquoted the actual rule in America in this letter anyway.
Right.
So now you're seeing backtracking. They're actually doing the work for President Obama to get in an indirect way, because they've been so foolish on this, to actually give him a leg up
Ayatollah Khamenei just came out and said this letter is proof that the American political system is in a state of disintegration. I mean, is it going to make them say, hey, wait a minute, if Congress is saying, you know, screw you, Iran, maybe we should just, you know, cut a deal with Russia or something?
Oh, I should clarify that this is giving the president a step up with the American people. That's what it's doing. They could have done, you know, nothing better to appease the conservative mullahs than writing this letter to go against the president. Yes, this doesn't help in the process of negotiations. In fact, if this falls apart, I would say that those 47 are going to be held accountable for leading up to, you know, what could inevitably be a war. But of course, if you take the author of this, as I mentioned on your show, I think Tuesday, Senator Cotton, within 24 hours, he was behind a closed door, off the record meeting with the biggest war machine manufacturers on planet Earth.
And that's prior to that, he was this from a post by Rickster over at democraticunderground.com this morning. It's actually from a piece that's at blunt and cranky.wordpress.com, that Tom Cotton, the Emergency Committee for Israel, gave Tom Cotton nearly $1 million in his race for Senate just 5 months ago, Eli Clifton reported. Cotton received $960,250 in supportive campaign advertising in the last month. And then you know, notice the pattern, gentle reader. Money goes in and a letter goes out. It's bribery, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody talking about prosecuting the Republican Party under the RICO Act?
No, you're not. I don't know if anybody's really got the guts to pursue that. I mean, they've done it with other people, believe me, I can tell you, on small potatoes. This is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen a more blatant attempt to try to raise money off of something. And you'll see letters going out.
Tom Cotton, they're sending out fundraising letters right
absolutely.
Now based on the fact that they signed this letter.
Absolutely.
Help us
and
stand
you'll see
up
under
to
the
Obama.
Direction of John Boehner, you'll see also letters going out about who's more pro-Israel and look at the Democratic side. But they have lost in the court of public opinion with the people. I mean, they have really messed this thing up in a huge way. It's quite amazing.
This is crazy. I opened the show, Bob, suggesting that, you know, basically since the last progressives left the Republican Party, that would be Dwight Eisenhower and Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican Party has not done anything that has moved this country forward in my lifetime. I mean, I can't think of one single legislative accomplishment of the Republican Party that has helped the average working person. I can think of a lot of them that have helped millionaires, billionaires, and transnational corporations, but nothing for the country. Maybe it's time to just
look at the first 90 days with this new Congress. If it continues like this, they're going to give a helping hand to the Democratic Party for a presidency.
Yeah, they can't even pass an human trafficking bill without screwing it up. It's time to go the way of the Whigs. You know, it's time to say, you know, this party was a nice experiment, but it got taken over by the billionaires, and now it's all screwed up, and we really need to reboot this thing. You know, what kind of party would Everett Dirksen would not be a part of today's Republican Party. I'm convinced.
That's
I
true.
Believe that. I believe Barry Goldwater would walk away from these guys and call them crazy.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway,
yes, sir.
It's not my dad's Republican Party anymore. What was once your Republican Party. Bob Ney, Congressman, it's always great talking with you. Thank you, sir. And Congressman Ney's book is Sideswiped. Be sure and check it out. It's an amazing story of what really goes on in Washington, D.C. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Now, if you're Canadian, cover your ears. Because the book I'm about to describe is not, it cannot be legally imported into Canada. And I would not want to incite a crime by encouraging you to familiarize yourself with it. Back in the 1970s, a fellow by the name of William Luther Pierce, writing under the pseudonym Andrew MacDonald, wrote a novel, sort of like, you know, Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged. Well, this is another one of those great novels. Oddly enough, it's not nonfiction books that seem to animate the right. It's novels, because this vision of America that comes out of the right is something that you have to make up. There's, you know, it's not like you could write a book saying, oh, here's a right-wing country that works really well. Let's emulate them. Right? I mean, I could easily write a book right now saying, hey, in fact, in my book Threshold, a whole chapter of it takes place in Denmark. Here's how it works in Denmark. They have a national health care system. The conservatives love it. They have good public infrastructure. The conservatives love it. The only thing conservatives hate in Denmark is immigrants. It's all about racism. That's what conservatism is in Europe. So, I could write this book and say, you know, Denmark may have some examples, some things that we could learn from. But on the right, is there any country the right-wingers can point to? I mean, they tried to point to Chile. You had this, Milton Friedman thought that he had died and gone to heaven. This was it. This was going to do it. With the help of the CIA and ITT, as I recall, the democratically elected government of Chile was overthrown by a military dictator, General Pinochet, and then he invited Milton Friedman and his Chicago boys down to Chile and said, okay, cool, here's a blank slate. Here's a country for you to try out your conservative economic principles on. Let's see what happens. Well, the first thing they did was privatize Social Security. Threw it to the banks. And so the price of Social Security went up. The benefits of Social Security went down. The profits to the banksters, of course, went up. And people got really upset. Then they started privatizing the schools. They started privatizing. Yeah, I mean, it was just Pinochet was just basically taking apart the social welfare state, doing away with long-term unemployment insurance, doing away with, you know, and people started protesting. So Pinochet killed them. He killed thousands of people. He kidnapped people. He tortured people. He murdered people. But to this day, if you ask conservatives, hey, can you tell me any country that actually has done what you guys suggest? They'll say, oh, yeah, you know, when Pinochet privatized Social Security down in Chile, it worked wonderfully. Well, actually, it didn't work wonderfully. In fact, it's being undone as we speak. It has been over the last few years. Decade, actually. It was a disaster. So anyhow, they can't point to anything, so they write these novels. So in this novel, this guy, the hero of the novel, whose name is Mr. Turner, Earl Turner, is telling the story. The novel takes place in 2099, is telling the story of what it was like when America had its race war. And the good white people of the United States, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, Catholics they weren't enthusiastic about Catholics. Although I think maybe Tim McVeigh was a Catholic. And two pages of this book, by the way, the two pages containing the scene of the preparations for blowing up the J. Edgar Hoover building here in Washington, D.C., the FBI headquarters, those two pages of this book, The Turner Diaries, were in Tim McVeigh's getaway car. This is the kind of impact this book has had. It has animated the sovereign citizens movement. It has animated the militia movements, the right-wing militia movements. Police officers around the country have been murdered because of this book. And in the book, what happens is that the inciting incident, the thing that triggers everything, is that one of these fundamentalist right-wingers blows up a major federal building. In this case, it's the FBI building here in D.C. They blow up a federal building. And in response to that, the federal government passes what's called the Cohen Act. Nice Jewish name. Get it in there, right? Because the principal antagonists throughout this book are Jews. The Turner Diaries are all about how the Jews control everything, right? They run the government. They run the media. They run business. And so Senator Cohen passed the Cohen Act, which confiscated all civilian firearms because the right was, the right. And as soon as the government started taking people's guns, people stood up and said, no, you can't do that. And they started shooting back. And they killed the Jews and they killed the people of color and they killed the government employees. And toward the end of the book, as I recall, they're sending a bomb to New York City. They took out Detroit. They took out Baltimore, cities with large minority populations. I mean, just sterilized them with nuclear weapons. And then at the very end of the book, this killing all people who are not white, which has been successfully accomplished in North American continent, is spreading around the world. All the Asians are being killed. All the Africans are being killed. Hispanics are being killed. This is the vision of the hard right in the United States. And I'm not exaggerating this. This book, The Turner Diaries, is the Bible of the hard right in the United States. They read this book and they read Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand's book. Atlas Shrugged, the principal message of Atlas Shrugged is that, unions and government are evil. And the saviors of a society are rich people and industrialists. And the message of the Turner Diaries is that it's not even the rich people and the industrialists who are going to save your country, although some of them might, but not if they're Jewish. Instead, it is the white militiamen who are, going to go to the mattresses and build atomic bombs and blow up federal buildings and kill lots and lots of people. They're the ones who are going to save America. He refers to Puerto Ricans in the book as, quote, a repulsive mongrel race that needs to be exterminated and their island resettled by white people. This is in the epilogue. This was first published back in the 1970s. It was serialized in the National Alliance's newspaper. The National Alliance is sort of the American version of the Nazi Party. It's a, right-wing, white supremacist, fundamentalist, Christian group. As of 2000, the book is reported to have sold 500,000 copies. The Order, this group from the Aryan Nations, they killed Alan Berg, the talk show host. Took their name from the book. Allenberg, this was long before Rush Limbaugh. back in the 70s, before Ronald Reagan had done away with the Fairness Doctrine, back when individual radio stations were owned by local folks, there was a right-wing or left-wing talk show host named Alan Berg, who was broadcasting out of, as I recall, Denver, or somewhere in Colorado, blowing a signal over 20 states, great big station. And he was a lefty, and he was Jewish. And these guys created the Order, this white supremacist group, based on this book, The Turner Diaries, and they machine-gunned him to death in the parking lot of the radio station. And that's just the beginning.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tim McVeigh in 1995 blew up the Oklahoma City building based on the Turner Diaries. He was following their script. He was expecting a race war to erupt. Welcome back. Ricky in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Ricky, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. What's on your mind?
Hello, Tom. Thank goodness for you. I mean, I get a few days off during the week, and I hope to catch you when I can. And you've just really got me just fired up about the political scene in the last few years. But in any case, scenario and your question. Oh, a statement. There's nothing worse than a scorned woman, I've always heard. Now, let's take Hillary Clinton running for president of the United States. I do not see why it would benefit her or the Democratic Party for her to run with a Republican Party running both houses. With that said, especially with what she had been through, she's an educated woman, been through the governorship, been through the presidential and the senator. Oh, she's climbed the ladder. And I think the Republicans would be scared to have her, and that's why they're going after her to make sure that she's going to be a lame-duck president from the beginning.
Yeah.
And with that said, do you think that would leave way for maybe the Democrats, if she was to decide I'm not running, would that leave way for Bernie Sanders to maybe be nominated by the Democratic Party? I'll hang up and listen to you.
Sure. Okay. Thanks a lot for the call, Ricky. It's nice to hear from you. I don't think that Hillary Clinton is going to not run. I don't think that she's going to withdraw herself from this race. She has put an enormous amount of time, effort, money, psychic energy, whatever you want to call it, into preparing herself for this race. She is clearly running for president of the United States. The question, there's no doubt in my mind she's going to be the Democratic front runner, already is. The question is who's going to be her running mate. And, you know, Martin O'Malley, who's a good Democrat and reasonably progressive guy, has been talking as if he wants to run against Hillary. I'm wondering if he's basically saying, hey, Vice President, don't forget me. You know, I don't know. We'll see. The thing that I don't like about Hillary Clinton's candidacy is that she has this long association with the Third Way, with the new Dems, you know, with the whole Clinton machine, the new corporate Dem thing. And she was on the board of Walmart and all this kind of stuff. And she's in tight with the banksters. I'm not fond of that. On the other hand, you could say that most of that was true of Franklin Roosevelt in 1932. He did not have, you know, a lily white past or a clean past or whatever you want to call it. He was a fairly corrupt governor of one of the most corrupt states in the Union. What I like about Hillary Clinton, and, you know, I'll just say this bluntly, is that she knows how to take names and kick ass. And I don't think that President Obama knows how to do that. Or if he does know how to do that, he's been constraining it to a very, very small circle of people in the White House who work with him. And it has not escaped beyond that. And I would love to see a Harry Truman type character. And I think Hillary Clinton has the potential to be that, even an FDR kind of character, who will take it to the Republican Party, who will call them out, who will fight back, who will instantly respond, who is not going to take it laying down, who's not going to let them roll over him or her. Now, that said, don't ever underestimate the power of misogyny in this culture. I mean, Rush Limbaugh with his Hillary Clinton nutcracker jokes and all this other kind of stuff, I mean, plan on seeing some of the most vile, awful attacks on women once Hillary Clinton is a nominee that you've ever seen. We'll be back 20 minutes past the hour. This from the Wikipedia page for the Turner Diaries. I mentioned The Order. I mentioned Tim McVeigh. John William King, who was convicted of dragging James Byrd, an African-American, to his death in Jasper, Texas in 1998. As King shackled Byrd's legs to the back of his truck, he was reported to have said, "We're going to start the Turner Diaries early." David Copeland, a British neo-Nazi who killed three people in a bombing campaign against London's black, Asian, and gay communities in April of 1999, quoted from the Turner Diaries while being interviewed by police. Frank Jude Jr., who was during the course of a federal trial relating to charges of conspiracy to violate civil rights and assault under color of law, by Frank June Jr., in 2004, by several off-duty police officers in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a copy of the Turner Diaries was found during a search of the home of one of the officers charged and convicted. Police officers in Wisconsin with the Turner Diaries at home. Now, just because you have a copy of the Turner Diaries at home doesn't mean that, you know, you're an evil guy. I have a copy of the Turner. Well, actually, it's in storage now, but I have a copy of the Turner Diaries, but. A copy of the Turner Diaries was found amidst other neo-Nazi propaganda in the home of Jacob Robita, who attacked three men at a gay bar in New Bedford, Mass. With a hatchet and a gun. He fled, killing a hostage and a police officer before committing suicide. So this is pretty astonishing stuff. This is what is going on the hard right. There is a serious movement in this country to start a race war, to kill Jews, to kill Catholics, to kill Hispanics. This goes way beyond just preventing people from voting. That's like the official Republican Party. This is the dark underbelly of the Republican Party. It's amazing how much of our language is essentially racially coded, isn't it? You know, I said Lily White a little earlier, dark underbelly. I remember back in the 60s, Dick Gregory did a brilliant riff on this. It's in his album, The Light Side, The Dark Side. Playing the album that I played in I think it was 68, that got me fired from WVIC. Anyhow, I've told you that story before. I won't revisit it. Stephen, in Burbank, California. Hey, Stephen. Thanks for listening to Sirius.
Hello, what's up? Great talking to you. You've shifted my focus a little bit in your extrapolations about the Turner Diaries. I called in about why the power elite are telling us who our enemies are. We can see the Reagan Democrats being told who their enemies were, you know, the immigrants, the African Americans taking their jobs and all that other stuff. And then I'm seeing American citizens at each other's throats with American citizens. And you had a caller on earlier, Mark from San Francisco. I've heard him a lot before. He was on Mike Malloy last night. And he made mention about going to the past. And in that vein, I will go to the past. It's something that Pogo said in a comic strip. I have met the enemy, and they is us.
Yep.
And when I hear, like, even our own people saying, our enemies, it would be nice to have us preface it, like, before or after, like, so we are told, or what they want us to believe.
Right.
So they're telling us that the Iranian government and people, they are our enemies. Venezuela is our enemy. They're telling us who our enemies are.
Right.
That drives me nuts, Tom.
Yeah.
Help.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, Stephen. And they tell us, they carve the world into friends and enemies in ways that advance principally their economic agenda, and, you know, which is another serious problem. Stephen, thank you for the call. Well said. Edward in Los Angeles. Hey, Edward, what's up?
Hi, how you doing today, Tom?
Great. What's on your mind?
It's a connected question to, the 47 Republicans. It's sort of a little offshoot. I'm in my early 20s. I'm very passionate about politics and social issues and trying to get involved in be part of the solution and not just be apathetic. You know, however, most of my friends and coworkers, including people I work with, I'm in the music industry out here, and, you know, you would think the creative side would be passionate about it, but every time I even try and bring up these sort of issues, you know, like specifically the 47% of those 47 Republicans that wrote that letter, and, you know, their answer is always, exactly, what can I do to change it? So what do you think, you know, because you're a really smart guy and I tremendously respect you. I'm just curious, from your perspective, how can you counter that and actually try and get people fired up that are in your, you know, surrounding circle? And
yeah,
sort of
Edward, it's a two-step process. We need to work an inside-out strategy. We need to work on the inside, which means showing up at your local Democratic Party and saying, hey, I'd like to volunteer to be a precinct committee person. The precinct committee people are the ones who write the platform of the party. They're the ones who decide who the nominees are going to be for the primaries. And so they ultimately, you know, in a very real way, decide who is going to be in Congress. So that's a really important thing that you can do, that anybody can do, is just, you know, show up. And in most parts of the United States, if you show up with a couple of friends, you can take over the local Democratic Party. So that's number one. That's the inside game. And then there's the outside game. Find groups who resonate with you, whether it's an Occupy group or whether it's MoveOn.org or whether it's MoveToAmend.org or Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, or DemocracyForAmerica.com. You know, there's a bunch of groups out there that are doing just great work, progressive groups that you can join, you can sign up with, and, you know, no giant obligation, but maybe once a year or something, you might sponsor something in your home, or maybe, you know, a few hours a month, you'll sit and make phone calls or send emails or whatever, or show up for events that these groups put on. We need to be playing both an inside game and an outside game. And this is,
I'm
that's
totally
how you do
with
it.
You on that. But the one thing that I'm also curious about, you know, when you have a pretty relatively big surrounding circle of people that you, you know, work with and or friends that just seem so disenchanted by the entire system, how can you get them to believe in it a little bit more? What do you think about that?
You find the areas of the system where you can interact and become enthusiastic, right? When you start participating with the Democratic Party or the Green Party or the Republican Party, for that matter, we need rational people in all of it. And when you start participating with one of these groups, then, and you get enthusiastic about it, your enthusiasm will rub off on your friends. It's contagious. Thanks,
everyone. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Nothing is as contagious as enthusiasm. We'll be back. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Yep, Tehran Tom Cotton bribed almost $1 million to send the Iran letter. The Emergency Committee for Israel gave him almost $1 million worth of advertising as he was running for the Senate, at least if the post by Rigster over at Democratic Underground is accurate, and I'm assuming it is. I probably should do a little more than just that. Joe in Springfield, Mass., listening on WHMP. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind?
Hello, you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
I was just listening before about somebody else called in and said holders should hold hearings about these 47 senators.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you said that he probably won't because he can't find a way to win.
Well, no, I said he won't because that would make it instantly political. And I mean, it's already political. Obviously, it was only Republicans
exactly
who signed this thing. But that was
thought you said he couldn't find a way to win a lawsuit.
Well, I think it's extremely unlikely that the administration, that the executive branch of government can successfully sue or prosecute the legislative branch of government without the legislative branch of government turning to the Supreme Court to adjudicate it. And that would be a mess.
I absolutely agree with you. But here's where I think I'd like to give you my opinion a little different way. The Republicans on IRS, Benghazi, Fast and Furious, take anything you want. They haven't won anything. What they've done is put their name out there, their face out there, their charges out there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Holder should start a case. We don't care if he wins. That's not the point.
Right.
Put the information out there. Let the people see what is going on. And let it be in the paper every day. And I think that's how they should fight back.
Yeah. Here's the problem, Joe. When Congress does an investigation, and this,
yeah.
I mean, you know, a classic example of how well this can work or how badly this can work, depending on your point of view, was the Sam Ervin's Senator Sam Ervin's investigations of the Nixon administration in 1973, and and they were looking at the crimes that the Nixon administration committed. And what they do is they do it through public hearings, and so they get John Dean to come in, and he says, "Yes, I told Nixon that there's a cancer on the presidency, and this is what it was." And then they go, "Oh, really?" And then they and they call some more people, and pretty soon it was the same thing with the Bill Clinton thing. You know, oh, let's look into. You know, he lost $35,000 on an investment back 30 years ago in this water, Whitewater development deal. There's got to be a scandal there. And so they have a committee. They look into that. They didn't find anything. Then they found that Hillary worked at the Rose Laws firm. Let's subpoena her papers. She can't find them. Oh, boy, it must be a scandal. Then they did find the papers. Then she fired somebody in the travel office. Oh, my God, it's Travelgate. Yeah, I mean, it's this continual look for a scandal machine. But they can do it in Congress because when they find things, it goes public. On the other hand, when the executive branch investigates somebody, when the FBI or one of the police agencies, the Secret Service, presumably this would be the FBI, does a criminal investigation or when a grand jury is impaneled for a criminal investigation, it all happens behind closed doors. If this administration was to launch a criminal investigation into these Republicans right now, we would not even hear about it probably for a year or two. We may never hear about it because, you know, criminal investigation, you have the presumption of innocence on the part of the accused. So I just don't see how, given the real politic of this, and I hate to use Henry Kissinger's words, but given the politics of this, I don't see how this can be done by the administration. I think it needs to be done by we the people. We the people need to be contacting these senators and saying, you did what? And then we need to show up at the ballot boxes in November.
Am I still here?
You are, Joe.
I agree with everything you say. But, you know, everything you just said is not doing what the Republicans are doing. They are you can't watch TV today without seeing things about Hillary, about the IRS. They're on TV every day.
Right.
There's got to be a way that somebody in authority somewhere, somehow, I don't care if it's Congress or Senate. There's got to be a way to rebut that because I've been listening to your program and we're talking about those Republicans that we don't want them in charge. Well, damn it, they're going to get in charge.
Right.
Unless we start playing the game a little bit more like they're playing it, which is you don't need to win the subject you're talking about. You present it over and over and over and over again until people make it a point to think about it.
You're absolutely right, Joe. But here's the simple fact of the matter right now in the United States. While the CEO of Free Speech TV is not a rich guy, the owner of Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, and Prince Talal bin Alawid or whatever his name is in Saudi Arabia, they are billionaires. The executives of ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, they are all multimillionaires. When people reach that level of wealth in this country, the Republican Party actually does represent their interests, or at least their economic interests. And that's why, if it's Sunday, it's Meet the Republicans on NBC. If it's, you know, if it's Sunday, it's talk to the Republicans on CBS. I mean, it's just this is why the Republicans dominate network news, dominate cable news, you know, everywhere. I mean, with arguably the possible exception of MSNBC, but even MSNBC, you know, one of their premier shows is Morning Joe, which is a right wing crank, former congressman. Who,
can I talk a little more?
Yeah, go for it.
Tom, I haven't called a radio program in 20 years. You get my juices going.
Okay.
You've got an intelligent audience, I know that, and I believe you get a lot of people's juices going. And I would like to see you, once again, when I think about that, the Attorney General bringing charges, I think you're strong enough and have a good enough audience that you should be a little bit more proactive. And I'm not saying running for office or nothing, but damn it, They should get out there and start screaming a little bit.
We're doing it, Joe. Trust me, right now, as we speak, there are people all over the country who are listening to our conversation, have been listening to this show, who are calling their members of Congress. I've got 11 of them sitting on my board right now. I don't know how many of them actually called a member of Congress, but, you know, there's a bunch of, and God only knows how many people can't get in because we only have 12 lines. It's happening. And the Republicans are starting to back off. You got John McCain going, oh, I don't, maybe it wasn't a good idea. And you got, you know, other, you know, and Bob Corker, who's the chairman of the Republican chairman of the Foreign Services Committee or the Foreign Affairs Committee, saying, no, I didn't sign it. I didn't think it was the way to go. So, Joe, I got to move along. But thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to WHMP. Michael in Boulder. Hey, Michael, you worked for Alan Berg?
I did a little work for him back in the very early 80s, 1981, 82, back there. I worked at a graphics firm here in Denver. So he was in the radio business here at KOA.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Boyles, who was also a DJ out here, very close friend of his, he was on TV for like a week, you know, talking about the order and the National Alliance and the Turner Diaries and everything. I mean, for like a week straight on the radio, without stopping. I just wanted to mention to you, you mentioned that he was shot out in front of the radio station. He was actually killed while he was going into his house.
Uh-huh.
I waited for him at his home here in Denver in Capitol Hill. And they had, you know, it was a military operation. He had been hammering the guys up in Johnstown, Colorado here, which is a very, I mean, it's highlighted by the Southern Poverty Law Center,
mm-hmm,
as one of the hotbeds out here in the West, of the Christian identity movement, the white skinhead movement, yep, and stuff like that, and the Prairie Revolution, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yep.
So, and they're still here. They've lost a little bit. Guys get old, they die and everything, but there's still a lot of crazies, you know, here.
So are you saying, Michael, that Alan Berg,
that my Bible is a Christian Bible and all, and what are we going to do? What I do is, I just want to mention, I call my congresswoman here, Diana DeGette, and I'm doing it every day now, just to kind of update her people and all, let them know, and they're very glad to hear. And we only have one kind of senator here in the state now, because we lost a good one, and the guy that replaced him is basically,
yeah, Cory Gardner. Cory Gardner, who was elected with the help of National Public Radio, which is
one of the Koch brothers and everything else.
Pretty astonishing, yeah. Michael, did you say that Alan Berg was assassinated after he spent a week talking about the order and the Turner Diaries on the radio every day?
No. Oh, no, more than a week for him. No, yeah. Peter Boyles was a friend of his, kind of a co-ally of his, and he's gone off the map in a whole other direction now. I'm not even going to bring that up. Peter Boyles was the one that, you know, really, I mean, hammered. I mean, he even got threats,
yeah,
and stuff to, you know, shut up, pipe down and everything.
Right.
So I just want to let you know that, and wonderful show, and give the free speech to me, please.
Great. Okay. Michael, thank you very much. Thanks for the call. It's interesting. It's interesting to hear these stories from people who actually were there and knew what was going on. I'm telling you, you want a threat to this country? Look to the hardcore right wing. There's a real threat to this country.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And now we have their useful idiots in Congress. And, you know, and the Supreme Court's saying, oh, yeah, if you're rich enough, you can buy any member of Congress you want. Welcome back. Eric, watching Free Speech TV in Portland, Oregon, on your Roku box. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Is your Roku signal holding up today?
A little bit. Sometimes it goes off, turns off, goes on, but
it's crashed a couple times? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I want to let the folks at Free Speech TV know about this. Anyhow, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Well, first off, on Alan Berg and the Turner Diaries, I would recommend people see Oliver Stone's Talk Radio, based on Alan Berg, and it was also a play as well.
Yeah.
Just wanted to mention that.
Mm-hmm.
But my main question is, what can we, the people, do to remove the right-wing parties from the political spectrum, since they're causing the problems we're trying to solve?
We have to insert ourselves into the political spectrum. The, you know, they're not just going to go away. They have to be replaced. And they have to be replaced, by and large, at the ballot box, which means, you know, getting people out to vote. And you know, doing that inside-outside game, getting some popular support, and also getting people within the party. I don't see any alternative to that. I realize on the right they think that one alternative is armed insurrection, and therefore we've got to hang on to our guns and Second Amendment and all this stuff. I think that's nonsense, and you know it's just nonsense. So what we need to do is we need to be getting politically active, and you've got a lot of opportunities for that in Portland. There's
right.
a lot of great organizations there. There's a very vibrant Democratic Party there. There's a very vibrant Green Party there, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, well, I was just going to say there are some great parties on the left that you know need to replace what we have. Like the Green Party, the Socialist Party of America.
Mm-hmm.
They even have platforms that help animals and the environment, which are
yep.
which is very important to me. So
yeah, and if that's where your passion is, jump in with both feet. And
yeah.
you know, eventually, you know, we'll get there. I'm actually very optimistic about this. I just don't think this kind of corruption can last. People are getting fed up with it. People are getting sick of it. And I think
yeah.
that we're going to see another very significant progressive movement in this country. Eric, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching us there in Portland. Mark in Chester, Connecticut, from one side of the country to the other. Hey, Mark, what's up? Mark, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Chester, Connecticut? Mark is apparently not there. Okay, let's try Larry in Eveleth, Minnesota. Am I telling
you? Sir, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
It's quite the honor, and thanks to you and Stephanie Miller, today I pledged.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Now, sir, what my point would be is, with all the gnashing of teeth and everything, we vote with our hearts and our pencils. We vote with our wallets, too. And you and some of the other Free Speech TV personalities have the power to convince the people, quit shopping at the sponsors of these organizations. I know the big medias are overwhelmingly large, and we couldn't really cripple them, but we can get a bamboo shoot under the toenail or something. We can irritate them. Tell them to start boycotting the sponsors. I'll never own a Mercedes-Benz, and it's not Bill O'Reilly's fault. I'll never be rich enough. But if you can understand where I'm going, we the people, the 310 million of us that have to buy our products, don't have to buy it from the people that sponsor these folks.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Larry. The problem is much deeper and more systemic, though, than anything a consumer boycott can deal with. I'm not opposed to consumer boycotts. I think the most effective way to deal with this is to gain control of the government and reverse Reaganomics. Go back to enforcing the Sherman Act, break up these large companies, so then you'll have some choice in the marketplace. Larry, thanks for the call. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Ann in Bellingham, Washington, listening to KBAI.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Ann.
How
what's
you doing?
Up?
Well, I just, for one thing, I want to thank you for debating the Republicans on the big picture. I can't stomach it. And I'm very distraught about the 47 senators that sent that mail. I think that you're right. I think we need to disassemble the Republican Party in some way. And do you have any ideas of how to do that?
No. I mean, you know,
thank you, Tom.
actually, you know, one thing that did occur to me is, and this is how the Southern Poverty Law Center took down the Ku Klux Klan in Alabama, as I recall, and that is that they sued, and they sued for violations of their civil rights, and they won, and then they got a declaratory judgment against the Klan. The president of the Klan and they were actually able to take the resources of the Klan. They got their headquarters building and, you know, turned it into something positive. I mean, I may not have all the details on that story exactly right. It's been a couple of years since they did it, but that's what the Southern Poverty Law Center did. They used the law to take down, you know, this right-wing racist group. And I think that, you know, it's not impossible that somebody could use the law to start taking down the Republican Party.
Yeah, because, I mean, this thing about Ayn Rand and the Turner Diaries, I mean, it's sickening to me. And
yeah.
I that's not a direction that I want. That's not how I look at USA.
I'm
we're better than that. And one thing more is that your father was Republican?
Yeah, his whole life.
My mom was, and she was nothing like this.
Right.
I mean, my father was Democrat, but you know, yeah. I was just like, she just was, she could engage in conversation and there wouldn't be fights or, you know.
Yeah, my parents were Eisenhower Republicans. I mean, they would not recognize this party today. And I think increasingly what's happening all across the country is Republicans are looking at this Republican Party and they're going, this isn't the Republican Party that I knew. This isn't even a political party. This is a front group for billionaires and transnational corporations. And you know, what am I doing supporting a front group for the fat cats? I got to move along, Ann. Thank you for the call. Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. You want to talk about the 47% of the Senate that's gone nuts?
Yeah, I do. But I want to really get deeper into that and really talk about the fallacies of the Democratic Party. And I respect you and I respect your show. However, I think you missed the point entirely from what Jill was talking about. And you kind of reiterated the points after your several callers later. You were saying that the only way to get control of this is through, you know, action, political action. Well, Joe was talking about something different. That is gone. He was talking about the Democrats never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity, and we're bringing a pillow to a knife fight. You have an opportunity here with 47% of the Senate doing a treasonous, at least a seditious act, and then the Democratic Party is not hopping on that. I'll give you an example. When Hillary Clinton had those illegal emails, it took about a week and a half for Obama to come out and say, oh, yeah, I wouldn't have done it that way. But yet, Obama is not saying much about this treasonous act of the 47%. Now, in your last call, here's another example. You were saying, oh yeah, we need to get out. We need to be activists. We need to vote. We're beyond that point. We have a dysfunctional government, and the first thing we need to do, and I think Joe was saying this, but he really couldn't get the point. He was articulating the point, but he couldn't get it out. He was saying this: you have to control the media. I'll give you an example here. Mitch McConnell won 9% of a county that's 93% below the poverty line in Kentucky.
Right.
Why do people vote against their own interests? That's the first thing. And the second thing is control the media. We keep calling Fox News a news organization. We need to first and foremost get the minds of the people to believe that Fox is infotainment. And I think those are the two basic ways to get this going. And I'm interested to see what's your viewpoint on that.
I think you're right, Lawrence. I think you're right. And this is one of the reasons why I'm not letting this lie. I'm going to be continuing to come back to this topic, and I'm going to continue to encourage people to call 202-225-3121, the switchboard here in Washington, D.C. for Congress, and ask for their members of the Senate and express their opinions. And if, you know, if appropriate, call Tom Cotton's office. And for that matter, you could call the White House. It's 202-456-1111, if my memory is correct. But I'm with you, Lawrence. Well said. Thank you very much for the call. Denise in Calumet, Michigan. Last minute of the show. Denise, it's yours.
Hello again. Listen, I have been calling my senators, and I've been calling the Republican senators. You cannot get through to Cotton's office. I did tell Rubio that I'm ashamed that he's an American citizen. I told his staff member that.
Wow.
I'm proud to be an American, but I don't think he deserves to be after signing that letter. I think that what I'm trying to tell these people is to please get up and stand behind our president.
Mm.
That we need to see more of that.
And not just our president. How about our country?
Well, yes, as citizens of our country. And, you know, before all these letters got signed, I did write a very eloquent letter to Barack Obama, which I hope he gets, telling him that he is my president. I support him. And to please don't give up the fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope he gets the letter because it was well written. But I, you know, my husband and I, we are members of you. We spoke in a room full of 30 people the other day. That was actually a funeral. That we, you know, really supported free speech, told them all about you, how to find you.
Well, thank you.
Read your book, the whole thing.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your kind words and for, and that you know, spreading the word. That's how these things happen. Not just my show, but, you know, any good progressive news outlets and information. Denise, thank you. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. So much. Thank you so much for being with us these 3 hours. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Maybe between now and tomorrow we'll see somebody prosecuted. I don't know. We'll see where this all goes. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag. You're it. See you.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.